That crystal is extremely powerful, but with a power that rightfully belongs to the earth, that of which it came.
Yeah, you know what? I think that actually really crystallizes
the... Ah, boo! You're the shit.
I was about to just really appreciate that, because I really do think that's a great quote for encapsulating, actually.
Thank you. That's what I was trying to spend. I know I should have had it ready beforehand, but I didn't realize I didn't have it ready, but I knew that's the one I wanted.
I just couldn't resist.
Yeah, you're real jack off. You're real jock ass.
Yeah, that's true. I won't deny that.
Welcome, folks, to the Spotter Pod, spot number 67. Can't wait for spot 69. Special spot there.
Oh, my God.
But I'm
just... New Year's edition, maybe. Or maybe probably. Christmas? I don't know. Who knows?
Hopefully we do this correctly. But I'm Jeffrey Excellence, and with me, as always, better half.
Whoa. All right. I guess she's not in the room.
She could be in the room for that.
Okay.
The sexual appeal of this podcast. Go ahead.
This audio podcast. I'm here, ready for the ASMR. ASMR. Oh, God. Yeah, that really does sound weird. Anyway, it's Sophie. just keep going. Just why not? Why not? I mean, if...
Can you hear it if I do it over here?
Very slightly. I don't know if I'll pick it up, but... Anyway. Okay,
good.
Today we are doing a very special, very kind of Christmas-y.
Really?
This is next week.
But I wouldn't say this is a Christmas movie.
I'm not saying it's a Christmas movie either. But,
okay.
But I do think it's a very prominent, very important piece of media. Technically, Ghibli Studios, famous for doing really good animated movies. This is their first really good animated movie, kind of. Castle in the Sky or Laputa, as it's known in Japanese. And I say technically, put that in because have you ever heard of Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind?
Yes.
So that was made by a lot of people who created Ghibli Studio, but that was before they were officially Ghibli.
I feel like, so isn't there a floating castle in that movie too?
I only know that what do I know about that? It's got
well, there's flying in it for sure.
Yeah, flying.
Dude, yeah. You know, I'd really like to watch Poco Rocco.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm not going to lie, I've only seen Spirited Away, which is a big one everyone loves, and Mononoke.
Love that one.
Mononoke, and this one, actually. I guess Grave of the Fireflies, too. Which I feel like I can't compare to the others, because that's just... That's just
completely different as far as tone and themes.
That's just its own category.
Especially tone.
Oof.
Man. Tune in next week for a special watch along with Ofi and his sister of Grave of the Fireflies.
I explicitly was like, I ain't watching that with you. I can't. I ain't looking at you. Nope, that's not happening.
And a special bonus, it's actually a video cast, so you can see Ofi staring directly into his sister's soul as the movie plays, especially at the end.
Especially when things happen. When the things...
But hey, things happened last time when we covered Super Mario 64 DS. Any thoughts?
So I actually did end up finding my, 3DS. And I did find my copy of a Super Mario 64 DS, and I popped it in.
Does your L button work?
Well, yeah, it does. This is the new Nintendo 3DS, actually.
Ooh.
That's the official part of the name. They put new.
Really?
But, yeah. But, hey, yeah, I look at my save files, and there's one with 120 stars. I'm like, oh, did I do that? I don't remember doing that.
Been a while.
But I guess I did that. But that's not all of them, you know. 120 out of 150 now. But hey, yeah, it's going great.
Thankfully, they do a little. Definitive. But actually, I think the neat thing they have is a little guide. Like when you pause the screen, it shows you which stars did you get from the courses.
Yeah.
And if you got the 100 coin star as well, and how many, and you know, there's 30 castle stars, or rather 30 secret castle stars to achieve. So I thought that was a neat little thing to help players get the whole 150, even though you just unlock a cannon to get to the top of the castle, essentially.
Oh, is that what happens?
Yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's kind of what you get, I want to say, in the original, where that's why you could only see Yoshi once you 100% of the original. And I don't know if they had the status effect. the status screen on the pause in the original with the star count. I'm not sure.
No, probably not.
They do. No, I don't think so.
I don't know. I didn't play it. But I don't know. Yeah, for me, I think this iteration of Super Mario 64 DS just shows the main appeal of the Mario games is its accessibility for players of high and low skill level. Obviously, and I know we said it last time, but if you're a higher skill level player, you'd probably try to unlock all the stars. Meanwhile, lower skilled players will just try to do the minimum and go through the adventure, which is fine on its own.
And I think that's in the spirit. Let's keep going on, winning on with that. Actually, I went ahead and played a little bit of Sunshine, and things were
going pretty good.
Things were going pretty good. I got doing my
flow. Some of those levels are actually kind of intense. Yeah.
And then I got to some of the secret stages, aka you don't have flood stages. And man, I'm bad at video games or something. Like, holy fuck! I was literally staring at some screen.
Do you remember the level hour when you play against when you had to fight the stingrays, like the ghost stingrays? That one's pretty hard.
Spray them out. Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah, that one's pretty tough.
Does it have a time limit? I think it might have a time limit. Maybe.
There is. I think you just have to, it's a survival. I remember trying that one so many times when I was younger. But enough about Mario. Let's talk about, well, we have no news. So let's just talk about today's main topic, Castle in the Sky. Because it's too difficult for Americans in the 1980s to pronounce Laputa.
Laputa. Laputa. There you go.
At least it's not Laputa.
What a coinkydink that kind of sounds like that.
I wonder
if that means anything. Anyway. So yeah, no, quick overview. Ghibli's first, technically.
The duality of man. Sorry, I'm reading the themes and I feel like sometimes we just meme it so hard that when I actually see it come up, I'm just like, LOL, duality of man.
Yeah, I know, but look, hey. And it fits perfectly in my opinion.
The perfect champion.
Man, how do you not put the world title on Mr. Fucking Perfect? He's Mr. Perfect. Come on. Come on, man. Anyway, enough about that. So yeah, you know what is perfect? Well, okay, I wouldn't call Castle in the Sky perfect, but I do think it shows a lot of Ghibli's greatest strengths when it comes to creating their movies.
Also, I feel like they do a lot of their beats that they will, a lot of those notes that they hit in their later movies do appear in this one.
Yeah, definitely.
If anything, it's like
the blueprint.
Yes, thank you. Well, I didn't watch what'd you call it earlier? Nazca?
Yeah, Nazca. I think, is it Nazca of the Valley? How does it go? I know it's like Nazca.
Well, the point I'm trying to make there is I didn't watch Nazca, so I don't know if that movie was more of a blueprint than this one, but going off this movie instead.
Japanese animated epic science fiction, science fantasy adventure. Yeah, sounds close enough. Going on a adventure with a 1,000 years have passed since the Seven Days of Fire, an apocalyptic war that destroyed civilization and created the vast toxic jungle.
Damn, what the hell?
Oh, man.
My neighbor Totoro, as far as I know, the background is just this weird rabbit monster.
Actually, I hear like My Neighbors, the Yamadas, you know that one? Like, I don't even know. I think this is just like following a real life family around.
No. I didn't. Is that a TV show?
No, it's a Ghibli film. Well, it's a comedy, apparently.
Huh.
Yeah, no, it's the guy. You know what? I do say they do hit a lot of beats, but maybe that's for the more known ones. Like I would say Mononoke and Spirited Away both follow. You know, fantastical adventure through adventure through fantastical setting. You know, but some of these are less fantastical. I think there's still probably an element there. But yeah, anyway, let's get into maybe these themes and tones of what we find. Castle in the Sky.
The duality of man.
Well, man, I love saying that as kind of a meme because it's just like, I don't know. To me, it just sounds so.
It's because sometimes people say that to pretend they know more than they actually do, and they're just putting on airs and being pretentious. The duality of man of Super Mario 64 when Wario became Metal Wario. It was duality and personality. Ooh. Yeah.
It showcases his true inner self, like the Persona series. Metal Wario is his Persona, I guess, and Luigi vanishes. Oh my god. Oh no, but so Bianca, as I said, my sister Bianca wanted to watch this movie very much. She saw it before. I don't know if this is one of her favorites, but definitely, well, about one of her favorites.
She recommended it, so I'm assuming she likes it.
And you know, I directly after we watched it, you know, I asked her, you know, what's your take on it? What are the major themes? And she said, yeah, it's about the juxtaposition of different humanity, the duality of man.
No, trying to avoid it.
Yeah, because I do think you transition from the like just macro. Like where we go from in the movie, we transition from Pazuzu's life in like kind of a rural, but still fairly industrial, a little bit industrialized. You get the mining, but you know, fairly rural, down to earth setting. And as we slowly escalate up into eventually the titular castle in the sky, and I think that's all. That also kind of shows what it tracks with his growth as a character as we go up. You know, and he outright
says, literally go up into the air.
And as he says outright, his goal, he states his goal very early on is to find Laputa. I don't know how to say it, actually.
Like Mark Hamill, I feel like said it different than Pazuzu, and then Pazuzu said it different from Sheeta, and Sheeta had an accent, and sometimes her accent was strong and sometimes it wasn't. I watched the Disney English version, so I'm going to go with just Laputa. That sounds Laputa. Correct to me.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
And then if I'm really lost, I'll probably say Castle in the Sky.
Yeah. And the level of technology as we go from very steampunky, you know, very lots of gears and kind of like, yeah, dirty old, yeah, steampunk, you know, the steampunk aesthetic with the mining in the town, to going up a little bit with the flying stuff, and that's still very steampunky, to like the when we finally reach the inner sanctum of Laputa's like highest technological advancements, it's like all black cubes that look very like very abstract, I'd
high
say
sci-fi technology,
yeah, it's like reaching into the high sci-fi, yeah, and I think there's that element. Even within the characters themselves, like I noticed this too right away. Like once we're on the pirate side, once we know, oh, you know, they're not so bad, and we have the dichotomy between them and the military. And I thought that especially when the military, they're supposed to be the good guys, right? You know, even Pazuzu at the you're making that fast. Another one of my buzzwords. Got him in the two D's.
Duality, yeah, dichotomy. The double D's. Oh. Good old double D's.
No, but it's when you see the military like raiding Laputa of its treasure, like as if they were the pirates, you know, and the pirates are locked up. I think that's a very powerful, you know, image.
Get the treasure.
What?
Even though the pirates escaped with treasure, still
they did, but they weren't.
I wouldn't say they showed the level of avarice that the military was showing, and the military, you know,
yeah, definitely,
for a government, maybe it's colored differently because we're American, right? But military in general is meant to protect the public and take care of the people, or at least that's, I would say, is a general American view on it. But in this movie, I mean, I don't know where this movie takes place as far as country wise, but Pazuzu even says at the beginning, oh, the military will help you out, in reference to Sheeta, right? But even Sheeta knew that the military, with her experiences with, what's the name of the general again?
The main bad guy or the
fat
dude?
No, main...
Muska,
yeah. Her experiences with Colonel Muska showed her that, or it colored her perspective that the military isn't exactly so great. And in this movie, that's even more prevalent.
Hey, you even see that in the very first scene where they're on the airship. And okay, you see the pirates, you assume they're going to be the villains because, you know, she's with Muska in the room. But then you see she sneaks up behind him and whacks him and knocks him out. Like, whoa, awesome. Whoa, dang. And we got a badass over here.
Whoa, this lady's kinda crazy.
This child is powerful. But it calls into question.
All
you know,
the power she's got in those two hands.
Look at the power of Sheena. No, it's like any time they say in wrestling, especially with Cena, they do it all the time with Cena.
Oh yeah, when he picks up a dude from the
Big Show. It's like, oh,
I mean, power. You kind of have to admit you have to be pretty strong to do half the shit.
I'm not denying the power of John Cena. I'm just saying they say it a lot. It's a very common element in wrestling commentary when he's around.
If I was 250, 6'2", and jacked to the gills, I would hope people wouldn't mention how the power that I contain.
So they call me the pirates, and even between Muska and Dola, the leader of the pirates, I have that of, you know, originally Muska's like, yeah, I'm doing this to help you. Well, you know, he doesn't say, he's very shady with his goals. He doesn't tell them why, I think.
Very shady with his shades.
Very shady with the shades until they're not shady. You could see his eyes and he looks weird. And I guess that's the point. But no, but like when he's like, oh, I'm doing this to help you, Pazzi, like either Sheeta, like you tell me, and then we'll let this kid go. He's not important. But if you don't tell us, we're gonna fuck him up.
I'll probably kill you.
Probably kill you. Versus Dola, who is leader of the pirates and it does have a tough exterior to them at the beginning, but eventually shows that she does care for these kids and does have a conscious, you know, she's not out to
she doesn't harm she them. Doesn't she try to escape treasure. She doesn't try to escape Laputa, even though, you know, everything was falling apart literally.
She's waiting for them to help save them out until the very last minute. So yeah, there's that where you have the leader of the pirates versus the military. You're supposed to trust the military, I think. And just the general atmosphere of the two groups. Because the military is very faceless except for the leaders versus the pirates. They probably have names maybe, but you know, they all call her mama.
No, they mention them too frequently, if at all.
Yeah, but you know, they call her mama. Oh, so she's big mom because she got big pink hair.
And a big ass. What?
Yeah, I mean, it's not small. I wouldn't call it small. Got plenty of children. Kind of, maybe. What if they are her children? That's,
I mean, wasn't the old man in the boiler room Pop?
Yeah, I didn't actually get that was supposed to be her husband, but I think I read on Wikipedia they referred to him as her husband, so I guess that's possible.
I mean, I don't think those are actually is at least the that's majority of them are her children.
Kids. Yeah, that'll be a lot of kids. I mean, hey, my man Philip Rivers, he got like 11. That's my dude.
Is that who's Philip Rivers?
He was the quarterback of the Chargers, but then he left, didn't get traded. Yeah,
because he had 11 kids.
The Colts. Nah, because the Chargers are kind of a sus organization. If I'm going to be 100% with you,
because if you have 11 kids, you're kind of sus.
Well, no, I'm not saying he. Never mind. Sure, yeah, why not? That's a lot. I mean,
that's a lot of kids. I don't even know if you can remember all their names.
Oh, no. Okay. Do you know what clip that's the, because I'm thinking of a very specific clip of a very specific football player who also actually played for the Chargers once upon a time. But anyway, let's not talk about that. I think these main points, I think I did pretty good. Oh, yeah. The Lapid is technologically advanced and awe-inspiring, you know, but at the end of the day, the people died out or something happened. Like, they're not
died or what?
Yeah, despite their advanced technology, something happened to not cause this society or kingdom to be around. So, you know, there's that. The clear difference between the murder robots versus the gardener robots. You know, the first encounter with when the first robot awakens and it just wrecks the military base, like that's some intense stuff. And she goes on to say, like, I don't even think I even want to go to Laputa because, you know, she thinks, oh, the robot is a symbol of Laputa, and if that's what it's going to be like, then, you know, I don't think I do want to go there if it's just going to try to murder me. But then they have that really great interaction with the gardener guy, You know, it starts out with protecting the eggs, like Blackwell Greymon did. Remember that? Protecting the...
Yeah, I remember that.
Flower. What a reference. Though he's an artificial being.
What does it mean to have a soul?
What does it mean to have a soul?
And then he's trying to have a deep conversation with Agumon, but why? Why? And Agumon's like, well, what if my uncle, what if my aunt had a mustache? Then she'd be my uncle. I was like, what? Hold on a second. Wait a second here. These are two tonally, dude, this conversation is on two different planes. They're not even same page. They're not even in the same book.
Oh my god, they're fucking different.
Black War Greymon's reading Charles Dickens and Agumon's reading fucking some Caillou book.
I was gonna say Dr. Seuss, but at least Dr. Seuss is like fun to like. It's got a little more complexity. I feel he's got some rhymes. If you know what I'm talking about, fox and socks, socks and box, fox and socks on box with socks. That's some hard shit. No, have you actually? You know what book that is? Yo, that book's hard to read.
Is it?
It gets intense.
Why do you want?
It's like no. I dare you. I fucking dare you to read this.
All right, folks, catch us on spot 68. We talk about fox on box with socks or something. Whatever the hell you said.
Chicks with bricks come. Chicks with blocks come. Chicks with bricks and blocks and clocks come.
And then chicks with dicks. What? Wait, yeah. Hold on.
Through three cheese trees. Three free fleas flew. Okay, I'm not gonna do this.
But no, back to the duality theme, like you were mentioning. No, not. It shows that many concepts and aspects aren't exactly one sided. Mm-hmm. The robots can shown to be destructive and powerful and menacing, like when Colonel Muska was using them for violence, or when they got activated to quote unquote protect Shida, or they could even do simple things like being. Tending the garden and taking care of nature.
Mm-hmm.
At Laputa, that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Laputa, the living descendants of Laputa being Muska and Shida, you know, they're complete. They both have claims at the throne, I guess. But they're both
part of the royal family. Yeah. And they both have different goals.
Completely different goals. Yeah. So you got that. And I think that kind of leads in, that difference leads into my second. Theme. The main thing I got, which is basically what Shida says herself, that Laputa's mistake was trying to get away from Earth, because ultimately we are creatures of the Earth, and we gotta live with it. We gotta, you know, we can't put ourselves above the Earth, because at the end of
literally,
the day, Earth is what made us.
You know. Yeah, I'm glad you have this because for me personally, I saw this as the main theme of the movie. Mm-hmm. Not only in when Uncle Pom pointed it out. With this pointed, when he was talking to the rocks, you know. Mm-hmm. But this is shown especially with Colonel Muska's arc, where he tried to be above everyone else, where he tried to be, well, what he called himself King of Laputa, right?
Yeah, straight up, like just straight up already declaring
himself. And then he was like, gonna essentially rule the planet. He saw himself higher than others. Above, quote unquote, the Earth, right? And how that ended for him was in his destruction, essentially.
And I like how even when talking about Pom, he said that the stone itself is a creation. He said it is a of the Earth, but the stone itself was created by man. Like man forged, took the power, as if man tried to take the power of Earth, of nature, and tried to. Create something
and manufacture it for a specific purpose that it wasn't initially made for. Yeah.
That as we saw when Muska, I say Musker, when Muska fires the fucking nukes. Oh my god! No, when I saw that scene, I'm like, oh man, World War II was rough for the Japanese, wasn't it? Oh man! Hey, Godzilla is very straight up like allegory for being anti-nuclear, at least originally. I don't know if it is now. I don't
what
know.
What are you talking about, man? King of Monsters? Totally. Totally in line with those themes.
It really wasn't originally supposed to be like the dangers of nuclear warfare. Because, yeah. Yeah, that's a.
Yeah, it's not so great.
That's still a topic that you can write essays on to this day. Still decision, but yeah, And actually, I do think when they use a destruction spell, all of, like, the, as I said, the advanced technological stuff on the bottom, like, falls away. That only leaves, like, the part that's covered in more nature. That is the part that survives Avalapian. And actually, to that point, the fact that once all the people left, like, nature kind of retook Lapita, despite being of not on the Earth itself, nature was still able to find a way.
It was essentially to reclaim Earth. It was
effectively where we all came from.
The Earth.
Yeah, because yeah, there you go.
No, it was a really pointed message they made that even with all the technology and all that advanced civilization distractions faded away, but then the quote-unquote Earth, aka the tree here, survived because everything returns to the Earth and you cannot see yourself above where you came from.
Except for Lapita, which apparently goes to space, so I guess technically it's not on Earth anymore.
It's a part of Earth. Okay, well, yeah, if we're gonna nitpick like that, how does a tree survive in space when there's no air?
No. Me and Bianca were like, I was like, she was straight up, it goes to space. And she's like, oh, that's really cool, because, you know, humans went to space.
Oh, that's really cool. That's like Gurren Lagann.
Yeah.
And Kill la Kill.
Go to space.
And, hold on. What's the one? Darling in the Franxx. And whatever Studio Trigger released. I feel like Little Witch Academia probably goes to space. I didn't finish that one.
What? Oh, man. I hope. I watched like a couple episodes. That was really good from what I watched. I really liked it. We should do that, maybe.
Maybe. It's on Netflix.
Maybe. Perhaps. Yeah. No, but no. She was saying, oh, it goes to space. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense. The tree can't survive. Those animals are fucked. Those fish are fucked. Everything's fucked if they go into space. And then she went to the Wikipedia, which maybe, hey, you know, Wikipedia is, you know, anyone can edit that, right?
Yeah, I remember trying to. No,
they're
on it. They're pretty vigilant.
They fucking will, because it straight up says the remnants of Lapita float into outer space, maintained by the volokite or volocyte crystal embedded in the roots of the central tree. So I guess
you know what? Maybe special magic floating trees have different properties than regular planet side conditions.
I guess I can accept that in the story with, you know, flying airships
and robots,
you know, bombs and robots. No, you can see the robots that were built for war, like those are probably all got destroyed as fuck. But the guys,
I mean, I was actually kind of under the impression that all those robots were the same model and make, but
yeah,
they can be used for different purposes to show their duality.
Yeah, no, I think I saw that too, which is why that scene, the graveyard scene when the robot hands her the thing is my favorite scene, at least, because it does show.
You don't like Uncle Pom talking to the rocks?
No, that was, okay, jokes aside, memes aside, that is also a really great scene too. Oh man, because you see the, when he opens the volocyte? Oh, I don't know how to say it. Opens the crystal, and then
was trying to come in the door.
Oh man, that's a problem.
But yeah, he likes to bang his head on things. Yeah.
Bangs his head. See, she just tries to sneak under the with her paw.
Oh no, he tries to force the door open with his head. If it's closed,
that's smart. That's a smart cat you got there. What a
smart as a concussion.
Smart as no, but actually, no, I do, to the point of with Uncle Pom, I do think that is also, that might be my second favorite scene with the sky, or not the cavern,
the cave
lighting up like the night sky. I was like, oh, maybe it's foreshadowing the space that Lapita ends up on.
Hey, you know what? That's actually not bullshit. I could believe that.
Yeah, no, I really like that. Anyway, let me move on to Tone, unless you got another theme you can think of off the top of your head now.
No, I think totally speaking, it's a. Would you say lighthearted? No, I wouldn't say lighthearted.
I'd say
maybe.
I wouldn't call it heavy. It does kind of go.
People die.
People do die.
But it's the faceless military, so I guess it doesn't.
Yeah, if I compare it to Mononoke, it's a lot more lighthearted.
That's true.
So I think it does tend to be more lighthearted for Ghibli.
It's a more upbeat movie.
Yeah, more upbeat, more adventurous.
It's not like SpongeBob.
It is not like Castle in the Sky is not like SpongeBob.
No. Tonally speaking,
I can agree with that. It doesn't go too. I think it does a good job balancing.
If I had to say a level of seriousness tone versus serious to lightheartedness tone, I would say it's like Spider-Verse.
Yeah, I think that's fair. There's a couple comical moments, but the main tone is fairly ish serious ish. Yeah, lots of intrigue, a lot of mystery at the beginning when. You know, you see, oh, is Castle?
Why is this girl falling to her death?
Why is this girl falling? That's true. Yeah. What's happening there?
Why is Mark Hamill not being the Joker and being this weird white dude? Is this how he is in real life? No, I'm just kidding. I like Colonel Muska.
I was gonna say
that was a good villain.
I was gonna say, I wonder which one he did first. I know the Batman animated series. I want to say is might be the 90s.
It's around the same time for sure.
Because this is... Actually, I don't know when they dubbed this. Never mind. They probably dubbed it later than... Because it came out in Japan in 83 or 86, but probably got dubbed a little later. Okay. It's definitely a good mix, I think. It doesn't stay too far into one or the other. And also, I actually really like in the mystery part of it. The fact that we never really...
Because it makes the audience ask questions. It creates the intrigue.
It opens your possibilities up, leaves it open-ended for your own interpretation of like whatever happened to the Lopunit people. Like maybe the point isn't what happened, it's just that something happened. You know, maybe it was their hubris of you know, trying to leave the Earth.
I think that's correct, too. Like, it's... They saw themselves superior, but their society, at the end of the day, still collapsed with them leaving it and deserting it.
Or I'm pretty sure Muska says that they wielded political power back in the day, straight up. Like, if you have a nuke, hey, you know, history shows that's worth something. That'll get you somewhere.
I guess so.
And then as the military shows up, let's say the stakes or the tension, goes up a bit. Because I would say up until the military like really gets in their claws, when it's just the pirates chasing them, I feel it's really fairly lighthearted. Especially the fight scene with the pirates and
I love, dude. They had the whole fucking flex off and everything.
Yeah, that was great.
That's the shit.
That's fun stuff, you know. But then the military has to come in with their tanks and then start fucking everyone else, trying to murder everyone. And then, I have a theory here that I think I only see the military ever directly threaten or attempt to shoot at the kids, and I don't think the pirates ever do that. I'm not sure if that's correct, but I mean, have a feeling like that's right.
Dola did tie what's his face up against a post.
Yeah, that's true. But like when it comes to,
as opposed to getting shot at, other, yeah,
like one of them, like yeah, doesn't the guy actually hit Pazu near the end?
Oh, they beat the shit out of him for sure. But there's a guy that was shooting at Pazu's head, and like they get pretty close. I'm like, wow, how did he not fucking die?
Yeah, and then like straight.
Dude, these military guys are kind of sharpshooters.
They don't care. Yeah, they don't care.
When Muska was shooting at Shida, like he's such a keen shot that he shot her ponytails off.
No,
I was like, wow, how did you not just murder brainer?
Hey, he's good. That's why he's a king.
Well, king enough, and I guess
that's why he deserves to be king. Yeah, no. But yeah, it does ramp up with the military's involvement. Like I said, the robot scene is pretty intense stuff, especially with the pirates being joined by Pazu, joining in with the mix, trying to save Shida. Yeah, there's a couple comical things, lighthearted scenes with the fight.
Man, Muska tossed Pazu some change like he was he just used his services or something. I'm like, wow. All right, just use and abuse, huh?
Yeah.
Cash right, them and dump them.
Not very, Jesus Christ.
That's what it seemed like.
Yeah, anyway. The pirate, I would say when they're all trying to help out Shida in the kitchen, and it's like, oh, didn't you say you were sick? What the fuck?
Now, my point of contention there is just, how old is Shida and how old are these pirates again? Okay,
so I did read, apparently, the dub made them more. The dub meta portrayed that more romantically versus in the Japanese. I'd say it's more just kind of like, oh, it's less. I mean, he does try
it's
to
like helping out a child almost.
Yeah, and the fact
or that, actually more practically.
Yeah, and the fact that you know the only woman they're around is fucking Dola, and you know as great as she is, she's not a looker. Although you did you see the portrait of her in her younger thing, younger self and.
No, I think I missed it. Yeah, but did she have a? She have braids?
Yeah, got the pigtails. I think that's what they're called. So I saw it more as just like, hey, they're just helping a little girl out with the thing. Just want to
see. I think
that's something different.
It's all fucking Disney's fault.
Wouldn't be the first thing that's Disney's fault, I guess.
Like buying out everyone's childhood, buying Marvel and Star Wars and.
I remember when that happened in high school, and my band teacher, or one of my band teachers, we had two, but one of them, he was a big Marvel fan, and he was so sad.
Really? But they turned out pretty well, I think.
I think, yeah, sure. I don't really.
They got a budget. They got a fucking budget.
I think it's just the idea, you know, a lot of people just have a dislike for Disney as a, just for being so
as big. A mega corporation, conglomerate.
Yeah.
That's fair.
It's like, it's not like Marvel was like a small-time studio that was making like, you know, small independent films that had a story to tell that aren't already rooted in stories that have been being told for the last 40 years or something. Like it's whatever. Like I'm pretty no, I guess it net positive, I guess. But yeah, okay. Talk about beloved characters. Let's talk about the most beloved character. The black pig that was in that lived with Pazu's boss. You remember? See that guy? That was great. or his kid, his daughter. She was there. She was great.
What the hell? What? Man, what are the animal characters in this movie? There wasn't. Shut up. No, there wasn't.
What are you talking about? Oh, see, you're missing out on the Japanese. Come on, you had the whole whatever. Fuck it. God damn it. Okay. Anyway, let's get into characters and arcs. I listed out the minor characters, kind of all in a clump, because you know, most of them don't have that much screen time once we really get to the
progression of the story.
Yeah. So I'd say Pazu's boss, his family, and the whole village kind of just set dressing, establishing the baseline of what's ordinary, or you know, they ground the series of this is where. Pazu comes from, you know, this is his childhood, you know, pretty normal people. Uncle Pom obviously likes his rocks, likes to get his rocks off. and sheds gives some nice exposition history
of the rocks talk him. The rocks talk the rocks, to me
the rocks told me you're a princess. Well, it doesn't directly say that, but implies that Shida.
I mean, he said that crystal belongs to the royal family. Oh, yeah. Doesn't he? Yeah.
Well, in Japanese, he says that only Lapidans would know how to do that. It's a little kind of different. Kind of the same point. Different. I'm different. Thank you. I'd say like the other military, the non-Muska military guys, especially the fat
general. Yeah.
Is just kind of there to be incompetent. And
he was just there to get murdered by Muska when he drowns him in the Pacific.
And to make
or whatever ocean Muska, that was.
Muska look very better. And I will say the pirate engineer dude was Dr. Eggman cross Danny DeVito.
Okay. Well, I mean, like that one. It's kind of just the same head as the Boiler Man Spider in what's it called? Spirited Away.
Yeah, that too, actually. I was seeing that too.
It's the same head.
I first saw him. It's very similar with the Eggman,
with the big mustache, bushy mustache and the
glasses,
short black glasses and the bald head. Yeah, except cool. He doesn't have eight limbs in this movie.
Yeah, but did the spider guy play chess and check? Check someone? Put someone in check. That's pretty impressive. I remember trying to learn chess in elementary school and
me too. I was bad at it.
Yeah, it didn't go very well.
So bad.
just got bodied. but yeah, let's get into the collection of characters. We've got the Dola Pirates. I'll put them in as one. I do think, yeah, that they have more, compared to the military especially, they have more unique personalities, unique personality character designs and traits that make them memorable. And they're lighthearted and fun. You know, and so there's a lot of their interaction with the other characters are comical. And I think I really like them. And I think that the turn, once you realize, well, one, when you see the fucking, I think it goes, the robot goes berserk because it's clear the military wants to harness Lopita's power. And then, you know, I think it's pretty easy to get on board with the pirates as like, okay, they're buddies now. They're going to ally with Pazuzu.
Because they're looking out for Sheeta as opposed to, just trying to find Lapita.
Yeah, and in a roundabout way, like, you know, Dola says, oh, I don't care about the girl, which, you know, she doesn't. She just wants the jewel or stone. And, you know, that's at the end of the day, Sheeta doesn't really care about the jewel either. Like, she recognizes very early on that it's a powerful piece of technology that...
Something I kind of didn't understand is that Muska was part of the royal family. He only needed the stone the whole time, right?
Yeah, I was thinking that too. I don't know why he needed her there.
I mean, the only thing I could think of is it's more of a... He's trying to preserve the Laputan people.
Oh.
Not in like... Oh. Maybe not in that sense, but I'm just saying like... There's... So it's... He's not king of, you know, nothing. Like, at least there's a Laputan people, like, quote unquote.
I think Bianca said the same thing too, and I'm like, I don't remember him saying he wanted to fuck her.
No, I'm not saying like that, but just like, if she's there, there's someone that he can rule over. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that.
It's like, can you say you're really a boss for your company if there's no other coworker, if there's no people working underneath you? You know what I mean? Oh, right here. Can you say you're a captain of a football team with no players? Right?
I mean, I get what you're saying.
Are you really? I mean, maybe you're technically the captain, but are you actually a captain? I mean,
I'm the captain. I'm the captain of the Ofi football team.
Yeah, you guys are 0-20.
The Ofi Ofletics.
Ofletics All Star Ofis.
Hey, I'm first team All Ofi, and there you go. Second team All, and I'm an Ofi star.
Oh my god, star. It's disgusting! Just disgusting, gross.
I won the Ofi Bowl.
Hey, remember when Dola won the Ofi Bowl?
What are you making me say? What the fuck?
Yeah, you're saying some nonsense. I think it's time to move on. So, Dola, what is her arc? Because she's a fairly prevalent character, right?
Yeah, no, she is a fairly prevalent character. She starts out villainous, right? She's chasing Sheeta. She's clearly saying, oh, she wants the stone. So, yeah, but then... due to circumstances, and as I said, she only really cares about the stone and is not really, and she's not willing to harm Sheeta and Pazuzu. I think that's the key thing about the pirates. They don't, I know they, as you said, they tie Pazuzu up, but they didn't like beat him up, right? They just wanted to talk.
I don't know why I remember that they might have struck him, but they definitely weren't going to the lengths that the military was willing to go to.
Yeah, no, definitely Muska is a lot less
endearing.
Willing to compromise. Yeah, a lot less endearing, but also a lot more driven to a means to the end kind of guy. No, but Dola definitely slowly but gradually warms up to those kids and kind of contrasts with the crew, because their crew are kind of goofs, but she herself is portrayed fairly competently. She's bold and knows exactly what she wants. And, you know, but yeah, it does show that softer side, especially with Sheeta. Like at the very end, she's like fucking bawling that she's safe doing the good old, you know, I can't breathe in her, you know what, in her sweet bosom.
Oh my god.
That's a word that like fucking Shakespeare would use. Like, come on. I'm basically.
Yeah, you're basically Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. You're right.
Century
Shakespeare over here.
Hey, but we have like three letters in common with her. Okay, whatever. Just.
No, but for her, her character arc is developing. She was someone that was seeking the treasures of the sky, right? But at the end of the day, what she really cared for was the people that she got to know, aka Pazuzu and Sheeta, you know, quote unquote people from the earth. So she too, I think, displays that theme.
Insert me. Oh, the real treasure was the friends we made along the way.
We should do that movie.
Which movie is that from? I have no idea. I just know the fucking phrase.
Indiana Skull.
Indiana, really?
And the Crystal Skull, or something like that.
Are you kidding me? Oh my god, that's terrible.
There's aliens or something in it, and then he says some shit like that.
And then the real Crystal Skull is the...
Oh, I know, there's like the real treasure was... There you go.
It's terrible. That's not good.
Yeah, it's kind of shit. What?
Okay. Where's my notes? All right. Yeah, Dola, maybe I'll talk about the scene when we get to notable moments. I'll just save that for later. But I do think, generally, the character animation does a good job of giving these characters traits, and like you can tell what they're kind of what they're about through their animation and their facial animation. So I'll save the scene for when we get to notable moments. But you know, and she even like tells Pazu constantly to start acting like a man, like be a man.
Even though you're probably like 14 or something.
I get the feeling like they're like 10 or something. Whatever.
Oh my god, that's even worse!
Maybe. Anyway. Alright, so this part, Muska. He's the type of man who really is like the cold, calculating type of dude that just like has a scheme for everything, and he does. And you don't see... It's not super clear what he wants. It's just, in the beginning, it's kind of vague. It's like, oh yeah, we're just finding Laputa, I think. I forget what he says.
We're quote-unquote protecting the girl.
Yeah, definitely that. Well, we're doing this for your own good, so just give us a thing. Give us the stone. But then, of course, it's revealed that not only does he want to control Laputa's technology, but he's also a descendant, like Sheeta is, and desires to basically rule the world as Laputa apparently once did.
I mean, if their robots are able to just... If one robot is willing to just bury a whole army, I imagine the whole Laputa robot force could probably bury the whole planet if they wanted to.
Yeah, I mean, like as we saw, man, got nuclear powered power. Yeah. Now, definitely do you think he's a cold motherfucker. I think
his highlighting scene... And I know I'm kind of jumping ahead here, but I think the highlighting scene for him is when he killed the general and his men.
Definitely.
But he just...
I'd say that too.
He has that cold speech, and then he just fucking dumps him into the ocean to die. Yeah. And then he blows up the people that escaped on the airship.
Because I think I definitely, and maybe this is contrasting with Sheeta, maybe like he's more aware, or it seems he knows more about his heritage as a Laputan. So maybe it's like he grew up
more enthralled with it too.
Yeah, he grew up maybe with knowing about the history and you know what happened. And like you said, like he wants to regain like Laputa's reputation. He wants to build it up. Yeah, he wants to reestablish Laputa's dominance versus Sheeta, who really doesn't really know shit.
Yeah,
she doesn't really know, and I'm assuming that maybe her family was also of the same mindset. Like, you know, Laputa is actually not a paradise, and they left and wanted to just live on the earth. And multiple times she's just like, I just want to see my axe. To live with her axe. So,
actually, it's kind of interesting. What's the word for it? I guess they would be foils to each other, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd say that, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I think what makes it interesting about Muska is that he kind of had to speculate on what his upbringing is there, right? Like, why is he so obsessed with Laputa, and why does he want to rule the world and such? And if I was to just play someone imagining here, or rather I am going to imagine here, it just seems like maybe his upbringing was that his family was always hyping up how amazing Laputa was, and maybe they had a... They wanted to show their superiority to the world, and, you know, Muska inherited that complex, right? And that's why he acts the way he does, and he tries to show the prominence of Laputa.
Yeah, definitely think he does have a superiority complex. And actually, I think that would also tie into him contrasting with Pazu, because Pazu also has desires to seek out Laputa, right? Yeah, but his comes from
reasons.
Yeah, for a completely different reason, a completely better reason that doesn't include taking up the world. He just wants to prove his dad wasn't a liar, you know. And that's a little, you know, cute like all. So yeah, maybe go into go into the sheeta, the sheets, as we... Oh, God, wait, hold on.
The drizzling sheets.
God damn it, I can't say that. Whatever. No, I think she definitely starts out to begin the very first scene where she just looks sad and forlorn. Probably, you know, because she is, her life is kind of in danger. She's being kind of held hostage.
Well, her family doesn't... She's an orphan, and then she got kidnapped by a random dude in shades.
Yeah,
and now
not she's great.
And then she's getting assaulted by pirates. So, you know, you can kind of guess how someone would feel that way.
No, but I feel like once she meets Pazu, like, I think she definitely lightens up, definitely opens up. I was almost worried, is she just going to be a mute the entire movie? And then, like... But no, like, the first time she speaks is talking to Pazu and quickly establishing what I think is the relationship that's the heart of the movie, really. It's a cute little friendship slash kind of more. I mean, they're kids. It's fine. So
platonic or romantic? I don't know.
Who knows? They're 10. Who cares?
I mean, what's her face in Spirited Away? What's the name of the girl?
Oh, Chihiro slash Sen?
Yeah, Chihiro. No, don't use her entrapment name. No, Chihiro, who was like 10 or something, said she was in love with a river thing, which is probably like thousands of years old, so that's cool. And the river said that she loved her back, or it loved her back.
Yeah.
Remember when your full name was Haku River?
Who was her voice actress? I distinctly Dave Lee Chase. Did she do anything else? Oh, she Lilo? Oh,
that's cool.
Huh? That makes I can hear that. And she was born like here in Vegas.
The whiny voice.
Oh man, Lilo and Stitch is great. I can't believe some people don't think that's a good movie. I fucking love it.
What? Alright, those people are dumb.
I was seeing some pushback. I'm like, I think it was mainly like how Lilo is a whiny bitch. And
she's like four!
Her parents are dead! Like, what do you want from me?
Oh, you know? My God. Like, you're her, dummy if you think it's
her sister's struggling, you know.
But her sister's doing her best, but they're still not kind of getting along sometimes.
Things aren't great, so all you need is an alien dog. Remember, if your family is struggling, just get an alien dog.
That could survive getting ran over by a semi and could probably pick up said semi.
Goddamn.
No, maybe she's the art of quote-unquote Stitch grown up, and he's like a jacked monster or something. Like, I fucking hate it. I hate it so much. I hate some of these motherfuckers with their fan art.
I can just imagine. Like, I don't think I've never seen
what you said. Plague on the internet.
I'm just typing. Hey, did you know they had a Stitch anime that's like post everything?
I saw some of it. I did see some of it. I saw the specific moment when Lilo comes back to visit Stitch.
She's an adult. Basically.
Yeah. But then Lilo's like, "Oh, I don't want you anymore." Like, she's not all kind and endearing to him. And then at the end of the episode, crazy. She reveals, like, "Oh, I only acted like that because I couldn't deal with my feelings of missing him." And I'm just thinking to myself, "This is all right, I guess."
It's a thing. I mean, I guess. Oh, I'm seeing some of these. It's kind of weird because it has grown up Lilo too, and she's looking a little.
She's looking NSFW.
Maybe. I mean, anyway.
Sometimes fan art is a plague on the internet.
You know, that's the internet is a great and terrible thing. The duality. Okay, anyway. Okay, I'm banning the use of that. Don't worry. I'm going to do it for the rest of the episode. No, but yeah, Sheeta has no, like, as we said before, contrast with Muska, has no idea.
Of her manhood.
Sheeta with the duality of man. Has no knowledge, duality of man.
Having both sets of... Never mind.
No, but yeah, she has no knowledge of the origin of her crystal. Like, she, like her knowledge of Laputa is very little. You know,
her greatest character arc was when she went from whatever she was wearing to poofy pajama pants.
With the pajamas.
That's the greatest character arc of all time, boys and girls.
That was that. That's some character growth right there, filling in those pants. Oh,
I feel like that's a
kind of weird.
A little bit. No, but in Howl's Moving Castle, that character too. I feel like, at least in those two movies, the heroines there go through a hair change, or they get their hair cut. So I feel like that's that is a prevalent Ghibli movie note there.
I think Chihiro ties her hair up maybe when she goes.
Yeah, I think she does. I mean, she like there's like a there's a change, a physical change in appearance at least.
Yeah.
Yeah, this right, actually
by that.
And Mononoke doesn't. Oh no, he doesn't lose his arm. He keeps his arm. Never mind.
I thought he lost his arm.
I can't remember shit.
No, I swear he. That's like. I swear he loses his arm. Wait, hold on. Wait a minute. What are we doing here? What? How are we not like 100% on every?
I think Ashitaka loses his arm. But no, yeah.
I'm pretty sure he does.
I guess the point I'm trying to make here is there's a literal there's an on-screen change that occurs with these characters.
Yeah, that kind of goes with their turning point. Because until that point, we haven't really seen Shida do things. Besides get kidnapped
and get hit by Muska.
Yeah. But then once she joins the pirate crew, she's helping out with the navigation. She's cooking. She's cleaning. Like, you know, she's doing cool. Getting to do more than just be a MacGuffin. You know what that means, yeah. Right? No, that term.
It's sure. Like the object.
Yeah.
What the story revolves around.
Yeah. And, you know, ultimately gets to go home because she realizes... You know, making the decision with Pazuzu to just destroy Laputa with the destruction spell. Hey, you know, that's a dangerous fucking... I basically... Those two kids were like, we are willing to kill ourselves.
They were ready to die. Yeah, they were ready to die.
I was like, oh my god. Oh my god, no, there's no way, man. No, come on. There's no way they're gonna... No, they're not gonna kill him off, right? No.
Is this Grim of the Fireflies?
Oh, they're fine. Yeah, no, I was thinking that too. I'm like, not again. No.
Not again.
Not for your first movie. You gotta have a happy ending. Come on. No, they're fine. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's kind of what this spot is. This podcast. Bit.
Spoiler cast. But yeah, getting into spoilers. Let's get into the spoil pauses. Growth. Yeah, he becomes a man. He gets to find Laputa's, Laputa fulfilling his dream of... confirming his father's tales. And I do like kind of his job at the mines was kind of like technically engineering, like working with machines, like Donatello. and it kind of infers that he will work with the dude in the airship. Like he's got technical ability. Yeah, I think Pazu's very mechanic. I think like Muska, he's also ambitious. Straight up, like he's trying to build a fucking flying machine in his own house by himself as a 10-year-old. That's kind of hard.
Didn't you
while
do that
having a job? Yeah, I also traveled around the world catching Pokemon. I became king of games. I got sucked into the digital world and befriended a dinosaur.
You woke up in Vault 101 and then hit up the working lady of the night in Megaton. At the tender age of 10.
Tender age of 10. Remember I had to like convince my mom to like Fallout 3 was my very first M-rated game. I think I got it when I was in middle school. I remember for the first couple hours she's like, I'm gonna watch you play it to make sure there's nothing weird. I'm like, okay.
That's fair. I think that's a fair judgment call.
I mean, other than like, you know, you kill rats. Or no, the rat roaches. Oh, you kill rats, mole rats. You kill people.
What, you didn't hit up the working lady and Megaton for 250 caps? Something like that.
That gets you nothing. What happens? A black screen. Come on.
You get well rested.
Oh, you do? Don't you get well rested anyway from resting like a normal person?
But you don't get resting yet. Shut up. At least in New Vegas they put sound effects.
Oh, that would have been great. That would have been just what I needed to.
I think my first M-rated game that I, at least that I can remember, was GTA 5.
Oh, really? That's kind of more recent-ish. But
yeah, I got it later.
Dang. Wow. Anyway,
well, actually, It might have been New Vegas.
I'm pretty sure that came up before GTA 5, I want to say.
Because I think it was New Vegas Ultimate Edition.
Ooh, Ultimate with all the DLC.
Yeah, now that I think about it.
That makes 2013 for GTA versus 20...
When did Skyrim come out?
09, I'm pretty sure. No, 11.
I think it was Skyrim. I actually think it's Skyrim.
Well, New Vegas, well, I don't know. You said say it's the Ultimate Edition, but New Vegas, they came out 2010. But if you got the Ultimate Edition, that might have been later.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, hey.
But no, I think I played Skyrim. Then I was like, oh, I want to play another Bethesda game. So I got New Vegas. Then I was kind of shit at it for the first couple of days because I had to keep remaking character builds. Then when I finally figured it out, I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty fun. And then
I do that too with these games. No, I think for me, I never really played as much New Vegas. I think I told this before. It's because I played so much of 3. And I guess at the time, I didn't really think of New Vegas as like a better game. It was just like, it's Fallout 3, but brown.
Fucking meme.
But hey, apparently it is one of the best in the series. Or the best.
I personally think it's superior to 3, but even if that didn't matter to you, I think it's worth the play just because it's actually different from 3. I know maybe back then people would think, like maybe if they were young, they would just see, oh, it's the same engine, so it's probably the same game. And I think I remember seeing a video game review, it's like, oh, it's Fallout 3.5, but I don't think that's quite right. It's actually a different game.
Yeah, made by Obsidian, not by Bethesda. Or published by Bethesda, but they didn't develop.
Develop, no.
So I'm assuming they develop 3, if that's how that works. Because I remember being kind of confused.
Bethesda made 3, I think.
The difference between developing and publishing a game. Yeah, they developed 3. Okay.
But Pods Dude developed some nuts, even though he got shot. Even though he almost got shot in the brain a few times,
That takes some balls to face being fucking shot in the face by a military. That's rough.
Yeah.
Took it head on. Oh, yeah, and God damn it. No, but as we said, he and Shida were so ready to die. Just murder themselves. Or not murder themselves, that's not the right word, but no. Oh man. Oh. You know, I think you know, we see his growth, as we said, it kind of tracks with the elevation of the show, of the movie. This is not a show, it's a movie. I mean, it starts out on the ground and goes up and grows a little more, you know. Dola. Fucking. I don't know why.
I mean, in English, it was pronounced Dola in the movie I saw, so.
No, it should be Dola. I keep thinking Dola and Muska are pronounced different. Whatever. She straight up gives him a fucking grenade launcher.
Moska and Dula. Moscow?
Anyway, but nah, I think we covered Paz's growth over the course of the podcast up until now. So
I just want to point out it was a big moment for him to stand up to Dola and get her, or rather join her in saving Shida.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that took a lot of
guts
to be like, you know, because it's like, oh yeah, you're gonna be an outcast, no one's gonna want you anymore. He's like, that doesn't matter. You know, we gotta save Bay.
I mean, he took a big step for what, like, he was never concerned about having the quote unquote ethereal power of Laputa. He just wanted to see it, and then he wanted to protect the ones that was near and dear to him, aka Shida. So, following the theme of the story, him and Shida are gonna turn out all right, despite using a destruction spell on the whole of Laputa.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Okay, moving on to notable moments. I don't think I even really had any plot hole questions. I'll have to double check. But it's a technically sound movie.
Yeah, for me, the main thing would be, like, if Muska is, you know, nobility, why does he need Shida to be in the throne room?
And I feel like it's a flex, if anything. You know what I mean? Like, because maybe at first he hasn't been able to show how to use the stone. And Shida's natural at using it, so maybe at that point he kind of needed her. But it's shown later on that he's able to use the stone effectively. So maybe all along he didn't really need Sheeta, but when she's in the throne room, I really do think it's a flex to. It's like I'm reestablishing the Lapidan royal family here. Like here, it's not just me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not in the procreation sense, but just there's an actual serving court of Lapidan royalty.
Gotta establish dominance. There it is. Yeah, I definitely feel that. Okay, so maybe going into the notable moments.
Oh, question. Why is the general so shitty? He sent his whole army into an area. Like, why would you not send a recon team first? You just gonna go full out and let... And then, you know how it went? Everyone fucking fell into the ocean for the most part. So great.
That's why he's incompetent. He sucks.
Yeah, he's the shits. Good point. Those who try to take the treasures of the sky with them back to Earth will probably die. Yeah, that's a correct note.
There you go. Any other questions at the moment?
No.
All right, notable moments. I think I've mentioned most of this stuff. Scene in the mine with the light lighting up like the night sky. Very pretty. Foreshadowing space, perhaps. Oh, we even got a Ghibli food scene. So in the beginning, it was like, oh, look, it's toast. Or it's like egg on toast. It's like, oh.
No, then it's animated pretty well, and it's aesthetic. I think that's another... what's the word? Not cliche, but... It's another highlight that Ghibli likes to do in putting effort into their food animation. Hell, Castle in the Sky, Mononoke, obviously... What's it called? Spirited Away. And even this movie with just the eggs, they put effort into animating the food and making it look aesthetic.
Watching the way Sheeta eats the egg, she's just like munching and like, nom, nom.
Yeah.
Like she's a fucking, I don't know what to call it. She's like a
cow?
I wouldn't call her a cow because that'd be like chewing like, yeah, they chew side to side. But then
that's what you were trying to imply.
Actually, I have a question. When Dolo were and the pirates were in Pazuzu's house, was the food they're eating Pazuzu's food or was it their own food that they brought? I need to know.
Well, I don't think Pazuzu has that much food for such a small boy, so
yeah, probably.
But they probably I don't doubt that she took some of his food.
Got the Luffy meat.
Oh yeah, the fucking the bone going through
there's gotta be a name for that. Anime meat.
I mean that's the icon for meat in Digimon.
Yeah. Actually I was gonna say, hey, did you know in Japanese Pazuzu's voice actor voices Luffy?
Wow. Oh, it's a woman?
Yeah, it's a woman. That's pretty common for being characters. And Musca is voiced by the evil dad in Kamen Rider Double? Who's the leader of the family in Double?
Yeah,
that's him. He's here. That's great. I saw that. I did a backflip. Trust me on that.
Yeah. 10 out of 10. Do not question.
That was great.
You want to know one of the key quotes from this movie? Pazuzu no Sheeta, weird pirate. Oh yeah, I don't think you got to hear that. Yeah, no. When Pazuzu resolutes to rescue Sheeta and, you know, redeem himself from his terrible mistake, one of the pirates says Pazuzu loves Sheeta in a really snide and short sentence, but now that I think about it, that probably wasn't in the Japanese version. No, and another notable moment for me is when Sheeta almost gets murdered by the military. One of the soldiers holds her up with a ponytail to see if she's still alive. I was like, wow! Okay, you guys are the shits.
You guys are terrible. I guess maybe.
Oh, sorry. Just
no. You finish. I was gonna go into my big spiel about the one scene, but were you gonna say it first? The
characters. Something Ghibli really does well in all their movies, at least the ones I've seen, is they're really good at characterizing the characters on screen. Like you mentioned earlier, they give them specific traits, like little mannerisms, right? Like one I can remember from the top of my head from Spirited Away is. When Chihiro puts on her shoes, she doesn't just like slip it on, but she kind of kicks the ground a little bit, tapping her foot to make sure the shoes fit. Another thing in this movie, it was like when they had the flex off, or right before, Pazu wants to be a big man, right? Justin imitating his boss, he flexes as well. There's a lot of mannerisms they do to show what these characters are like, which I appreciate.
Yeah, literally using the animation itself to help tell the story. That's like the height of what animation can be, is, you know, it's in service of.
One question. I do have one question.
Okay, sure, go for it.
So, Shida was told to never give her necklace to anyone by her family, but then Pazu asks, like, maybe 5 minutes from meeting her, hey, can I see your necklace? And then he proceeds to jump off the roof with it.
Oh, yeah, so, you got him! Yeah, that's great! He's dead! He's dead! If you made a hole in brick, you're dead. Movie over, Shida gets taken.
Yeah, basically. Oh, you know, like when you die in Mass Effect and the trouble music plays and the screen turns red? Critical mission failure.
Yeah.
No, but like, she gets told that and then she instantly gives it to Pazu almost. But maybe he was just so charming and innocent.
No, I do think because, well, one, he's a kid. She can tell that he's not an adult trying to manipulate her.
He could be an evil kid.
Maybe. I guess he could be evil kid. It was a trumpet, man. The trumpet playing skills, he charmed her. He's not bad. He's pretty good.
I'm sure.
He probably played the main theme. I don't remember. Okay. Let me get into the moment. One of my favorite moments. Maybe my favorite moment. Top three. Whatever. I don't want to number them. It really is when Pazu and Shida are having their moment in the crow's nest. And I think that's a really good character building for all of them involved. Including Dola.
Especially everyone who was eavesdropping, which was actually everyone in that crew.
Yeah, that was great. No, but so first off, like, Dola knows exactly that Shida is... Cause I'm pretty sure she tells Shida, hey, don't go out, or don't, you know, just stay put. But then she directly sees her disobeying orders, and instead of getting angry, telling her to get back in bed, no, she knows, she lets her, because she understands... You know, she hasn't had time to just decompress and talk with her friend, you know? And then she just says that she hopes they don't find Lopita. And I actually like the way the scene is framed, where most of the conversation is told from Dola's point of view in her bed, listening on the really kind of cool-looking intercom system, you know? And you could see the way Dola's face changes as the conversation goes. So, like, you know, when she just says she hopes that they don't find Lopita, you know, she looks alarmed because maybe she thinks, oh, maybe, you know, she'd lie.
They're fucking with me.
They're fucking with me. They're just getting a free ride. You know, but then, you know, calms down when Shida assures Pazu and then technically everyone else that the light is indeed pointing to Lopita. And then she starts to kind of drift off to sleep. But then when Shida mentions the spells, namely the spell of destruction, she goes back to listening again. Like, oh, you know, there's some power here. There's something could happen, or there's something interesting going on with those girls. She's got some spells.
The power of John Cena.
The power of John Cena.
The power of Princess Shida.
The Prince
Thalos.
Yeah. And, you know, Pazu during this whole time is trying to calm her down. And as he's done before, like when he says, oh, you know, there's no way the stone is evil, it's already saved their life twice, which is true. You know being able to float helped them. And I think, yeah, you can see the apprehension with Shida not wanting to see Lopita due to the encounter with the robot. But then Pazu says here, I'm looking at it right here, you know, throwing the stone away won't make Lopita disappear. Like, that won't make anything better. Well, I guess it would rid it of a power source, so maybe. But no, if you throw it away, maybe Muska can just find it.
Yeah, Muska could A, find it, or B, he's probably still going to try to find it regardless. Mm-hmm. Or try to find Lopita regardless.
Yeah, so, you know, he's kind of laying out that we have a duty to bring it to Lopita ourselves with our intentions and not someone like Muska. So, oh, no, I just really love that scene, though. The way it's framed is really unique. And it's able to build up character moments with multiple characters at once, despite supposedly only being a private conversation between two characters. So I really like that one.
For me, aside from the ones that you've mentioned, like we already mentioned, when the robot had lasers, I popped for that. But I was like, oh, that dude's got a laser? But obviously, any of the Laputa destruction scenes were interesting. Like Laputa's lightning, or thunder rather, like you mentioned, or the robots being deployed. But I think the main one that I just remember vividly was the destruction spell scene. Just seeing all of Laputa crumble away, but also them initiating the spell hand in hand. And also it was kind of like a weird thing. Like, let me talk to her for a few seconds, and then, you know, like, what's the plan? The plan is we blow everything up, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, great plan.
That takes conviction. No, and actually, yeah, they have this highlight. I wrote this one here. When she is talking about the spells, I had to learn the bad spells so the good spells had power. And then that kind of goes back to, yeah, going back to that first theme that I had that I won't say. No, yeah, because you can't
It truly is the dichotomy that these spells, quote unquote, are good and aren't really good and bad if you think about it. Because although destroying Laputa might be seen as a bad thing in the context of this movie, or rather this story, it's a good thing because it prevented Colonel Muska from wielding its power. So it goes along with that theme, that showing that not everything is so black and white. Like, there's a time and place for it to be quote unquote good and to be quote unquote bad.
Yeah, and I think that kind of goes into technology and power are what we use it for. You know, the existence of a laser or giant laser robots, you know, just because we can make, depending on what we use that for, you know, maybe it can turn into a big laser robot, or it could turn into,
or they could be gardening robots.
That, you know, that places flowers. Like, man, did they teach the robot to do that?
Maybe.
Did it just develop that on its own? Is this Wally? Is he Wally? Is Wally over there?
That's the interesting thing about this movie, is you're left to speculate those types of questions.
Yeah, I kind of do appreciate that despite being the name of the movie, we don't actually know that much about the titular castle in the sky, other than the fact that
it floats
in the sky.
And then it's in space.
Yeah. And actually really like the when they're going to Laputa during the storm, actually. I have this in effects. But I really like that one when the lightning itself is like, it looks alive, like the way it's moving. It looks like very dragon-esque to me. Like, you know what I'm talking about? When it's like the way they animated the lightning just really looked to me.
Oh yeah, yeah, kind of. Well, I mean, isn't that kind of how like they have the thunder god is represented with a dragon?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, that can, yeah, basically. So I really like that one. And of course the grave scene, tying it all together, showing that, you know, we are what we make of the world, or something like that. Some poignant message that I haven't already said 20 times in the podcast. No, yeah, like, it's the when the robot.
Oh, at least the shows we understood the theme.
No, themes. When the robot's extending the flowers to Sheeta as like a, you know, kind of like a peace offering. It's
the last time a robot extended her hand to Sheeta and she climbed on, the robot destroyed the whole castle, so.
Yeah. I mean,
it's a nice callback, and it shows, you know, the theme that we keep jerking off.
Of course, demonstration of Laputa's thunder with the nuke. That was a oh shit moment. And yeah, that competition.
That's a good name too, though.
Laputa's thunder.
Yeah, because, you know, yeah. It's like, oh, it's a natural event because we're creating, or we're like gods. Nature. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We can control nature. It shows the arrogance that the that the Laputan people had, or at least it implies.
Now we're back with Jurassic Park, the arrogance of man.
I mean, kind of. In a sense.
Definitely. No.
In a sense. Yeah.
The price we pay for progress. I think that was Bianca's final like kind of point. Is like, yeah.
Maybe she should have been on this one. Oh, well.
I asked her, and she's like, hey, you can do it yourself.
You and your five listeners.
We've been here for like 2 hours now, I think. This is a long one.
Well, let's keep on going.
Let's keep on going with key directing. And yeah, I think Bianca mentioned to me, and I think this fits into directing, is the way scenes move a lot vertically. Starting out in the sky with the airships, Sheeta falls down, they get chased into the mines.
Yeah, I actually didn't even realize that. That's a good... Good point.
And I really like the imagery when Pazu's held in the prison with very tall ass walls.
So yeah, it seems inescapable.
Jim is Cable, and then you see, oh, there was a door right there. Oh, there's a door right there. Like, yeah, like, oh god, did they drop him? Like, what happened? They got on the
dropped him in there.
Yeah. And then obviously
the, oh, that's the actually a really good catch. I didn't even realize that.
I didn't think about that
good
either.
On her. No, good on her.
A lot of verticality fits in with the theme. Going back home down to earth at the end. And I have just a big here thing, because Olapita is actually based off of a very similar flying city from Gulliver's Travels by Jonathan Swift, which is also a flying island kingdom of educated elites who had advanced technology, but failed to make practical use of their knowledge, quote unquote, from the Wikipedia. Because I don't want to read. If I was good, I would actually read it and pull out a quote, but we're not doing a fucking essay here. I mean, it kind of looks like I did, didn't it?
How many words? You were just passionate about this one.
I just had a lot to say. No, but I think that, you know, that fits in really well, I think, with the Lapita in this. You know, and, just as Muska tries to do in this movie, attempts to do, the king of the Lapita in that book also used the island's technological advantage to hold political power. And like the weird stuff like this, like they don't believe in practical geometry. Like they don't use right angles. They don't use exact measurements. So none of their shit fits. It's weird. And I think the point is that Lapita was like really like great, but flawed. Like they had some really cool things going on, but ultimately they were still a flawed people with problems that, you know, ultimately weren't very practical. I don't think it gets destroyed as it does in this movie. And Jonathan Swift actually was a very, very outspoken in politics. I'm not going to try to make a stand on 18th century Ireland versus British politics, but apparently I think he was born in, he's British, but then he went to Ireland, so he's known as an Irish writer, at least to me.
All right,
from what I read. Actually, did he ever do the read A Modest Proposal, the one about eating babies?
No.
No? Never read that one? No, because he also does a lot of satire. I read that in college. So basically, he tells poor people, hey, sell your make money by selling your babies to the elite, so because that's the thing, I guess.
Gotta pay those loans somehow.
The satirical hyperbole mocked heartless attitudes towards the poor, as well as British policy toward the Irish in general. There you go.
Mocking the British? I've never heard of such nonsense and disrespects.
Yeah, no, who would ever do that? I mean, that's just dumb.
Dumping their tea in the harbor? What?
What tea? I have my tea.
Remember when the sweet life of Zack and Cody had Zack and Cody travel to the past, and they were the ones that started the revolution by dumping the tea in the harbor? I remember. Yep, just gonna let that lie. Zack and Cody started the revolution, bro. Facts.
Anyway, Muska also alludes to the fact Lapita straight up destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. I think he says that. Yeah. I don't know if he says it in English. Does he?
Yes.
Straight up. Straight up. It was us. It was me. It was me. Us. It was me. What story was that related to in the Bible? Who? I don't know.
I thought you were about to say, what story was Vince McMahon saying it's me, Austin, related to in the Bible? I was like, what? I don't fucking know.
When it was he and him and Shane versus Shawn Michaels and God? I'll never not find that funny. Oh, they went through with that. That's crazy. How did people must have gotten angry? Maybe, because I mean, I'm sure.
Is that on pay per view? I just can't imagine that people paid for this.
I mean, I don't think that was the main event. At least, I hope. If it was, then there's no way.
Even better.
Like the fact that it went the way it does. No, yeah.
Backlash 2006. With a picture of Triple H doing his pose, but it kind of looks like Jesus, but really jacked in a sense.
Hey, you know, that's our Christmas episode, even though this was in April. And he's the reason for the season.
Oh my god. The second main event was Shawn Michaels and quote unquote God versus Vince and Shane McMahon in a
no holds barred
match, which was won by the McMahons.
It went 1957? What the fuck? I mean, to be fair, Shawn Michaels is a very talented wrestler going up against his boss.
I think it was his tag partner that actually carried that whole match.
Yeah, you're probably right. It's like Patrick beating himself up in the Salt Lake Platoon episode.
The third main event was a title versus cage match that pitted Mr. Money in the Bank, Rob Van Dam, against Intercontinental Champion Shelton Benjamin. The first of these three main events was a triple threat match for the WWE Championship, which saw John Cena defeat challengers Triple H and Edge to retain his title.
Wow.
Spoilers. But hey, about that Shawn Michaels and God match.
I mean, Shawn is a very outspoken, born-again Christian.
And they say Vince McMahon hates tag team wrestling, but he creates gems like this.
Hidden classics, if you will. What did the when they have the versus picture? What did that look like? Did they actually just have like?
There's only one way to know, and you have to look it up. Shawn Michaels.
Oh, is this it? I don't know.
Images.
This is great content.
Oh no! This is a fan create. Oh yeah, I think this is it. Yeah. I think this is it. Hold on, I'll put it in our... Why don't you move on to FX while I'm doing this?
Let's moving on to FX. No, I think especially that intro. The intro with the music and the old time. I don't know what to call it. You know how where there were like a bunch of lines in the coloration, or you know what I'm talking about when I say intro, right? It's like the little music piece between when Sheeta falls off the ship to... And they use like lines. Yeah, okay, I'm looking. I saw that one too. Okay, yeah.
You know, this doesn't even look legit the more I look at it.
I know, it doesn't look... Backlash at WWE.com, Tops. That's a sports card company.
Hmm. I
could believe it.
Maybe.
I really could believe it. No, but that intro, like, hey, fucking Mother's Basement's got a What's in an OP video about...
Oh, really?
So, I didn't watch it yet. Because I wanted to see what I could come up with on my own. But
if you want a more nuanced opinion that isn't ours, please check that video out.
That's only 6 minutes in versus, what, 2 hours in now?
Yeah, I think we're getting closer. So something
getting close to 2 hours.
Yeah. So I think another notable thing for these Ghibli movies that would come out and why this movie was quote-unquote a blueprint for all the other ones, like we mentioned earlier, was that a lot of the soundtrack is... It's awe-inspiring and it creates a sense of wonder, or it could be devastating and show the seriousness of the moment. And I think this movie is a great showcase for that, specifically with the Goliath battle music for the airship, or like you mentioned, for the opening, or even when Laputa is falling apart. I think that music is good as well. There's a lot of memorable soundtracks here that I can even think of right now.
Yeah, definitely. I think music-wise, I think maybe other than the 80s synths that sound kind of weird to me, because they just scream 80s to me now. You know what I'm talking about? It's especially when they had the, what do they call them? The dragonflies? Or the what do you call it? The little bike, the flying bikes that the pirates have. I think it mainly plays.
Oh, yeah, whatever those are called, yeah.
And they're going. Not that I don't like it. I do. I mean, I do like a lot of 80s music, but
and then also for
specific age, but yeah,
for sound effects, aside from the soundtrack, another way that they characterize a lot of the on-screen characters, and specifically I want to mention here is the robots, is I love how when they move it's the sound of wind chimes, essentially.
Oh, wind chimes.
That's what it made me think of.
I didn't equate to that. Okay, I'll have a listen to that just to see. That's about, because I think that would fit too in the prevalence of wind and airships and stuff.
Yes, I agree.
And that'd be very thematically appropriate. Yeah, but I kind of just do want to dig in a little bit into the intro, just an overview. I think the intro kind of foreshadows the plot, the overall plot structure of the movie, how it begins with being in these steampunky industrial setting where Gorpazu comes from. And then you see like the fumes of smoke coming out of like the bellows or whatever. And then you go into the airships and going into the sky. And actually you do see what assumes to be Laputa and like a bunch of other flying islands, you know, maybe implying that Laputa wasn't the only one, that maybe before in the past that this was a more common thing. And then actually you end with, a shot of Shida in her yak. So I think that's kind of bridging the gap between Pazu and Shida. Like it begins with him and ends with her, you know, like bookending the adventure.
At the end, I am Alpha. Too. Yeah, the Alpha and Omega.
No, yeah, the Ouroboros.
Beginning at the end. The
beginning and the end. Things fall apart. No, I don't want to. Things fall apart. I swear, it's like old. Everyone in our
life. Yeah, everyone meme that shit so hard. And half these fuckers probably didn't even read it, but they memed that quote.
I didn't read it. I only read like half of it.
Things fall apart. The center cannot hold.
It really is rude.
I kind of want to get a second crack at that book.
Maybe. Why not?
Because I don't think I really quite understood it the first time.
Yeah, we were kids, but now we're slightly older.
Now we're heavier kids.
Now we're 25. Well, you're not 25. Not. I turned 25 in 2 months.
Yeah, so you're not 25 yet either.
I'm scared. I'm getting old. What the fuck?
Might as well die now.
I won't say that, but no, I love the intro and the music too. Like at this point, like I don't think either of us know that much about music to like real or music or animation to really
pull. Well, speak for yourself. I went to Vanderbilt College of Music Institution.
I don't think you did.
I don't think you did.
You're right. I didn't. Isn't your degree in fucking chemistry? What the fuck are you talking about?
My degree's in shut the fuck up, maybe.
you're making musical tones with your acetone. Oh wait, that's stupid.
With my ass a tone.
Tone? No. Whatever. Oh yeah, animation's pretty good. This is 86. I don't think maybe some of the character designs to me does look kind of dated a bit. Maybe like, or am I kind of some of the faces?
It's definitely a more classic anime style.
Yeah.
Like whether or not you think that's good or bad is more up to a personal preference, I would say.
I still think, and I you see this a lot with like stylized art styles, like they hold up a lot better in the future compared to movies that are trying to be realistic for their current year, you know, because obviously photorealism is only going to get better and better, but no, I think definitely when I see some of the faces, it reminds me of like Astro Boy, which is like an OG.
Oh yeah, like
one of the OG animes. So I think that's a good thing.
Hundreds of episodes, I think.
112 chapters. Okay, and media. There's like three different series. 1963 in black and white. There is a movie. Was it good?
I mean, I liked it when I was younger.
Okay, 193. Jeez.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, you know what? I was thinking of Detective Conan. That one has hundreds of episodes.
I was going to say, is it still going? But I don't.
Probably.
I think I want to say that might be the longest anime.
No, Raw is. Monday Night Raw, longest running anime of all time. Sensei Vince McMahon at the helm.
Sensei, or he'd be like the principal, I guess. Or maybe the president. Oh, I guess he's like CEO. What's the difference? I don't know anymore. The difference. Is he even head of chairman?
I don't fucking know.
What's his position anymore? I don't know. Shot show / shoot show / ten show. I don't know what word to use. Whatever.
I thought Vince McMahon itself was a position.
I guess you're right. I love that idea that when he retires, like, or he's just gonna,
when it shows up on his paycheck, it says title Vince McMahon person, and then it, like, it says his name and then quotations Vince McMahon.
Oh my god. So Detective Conan / case closed. 900. Well, doesn't One Piece have like have? Okay, so Detective Conan's at 992. How many episodes? I know, actually, I'm pretty sure One Piece just reached 1,000 chapters. So that makes me think the TV series isn't there yet.
Oh.
So I think, yeah, I think it still is Detective Conan. 954, so it's close.
Jesus.
But still the king, Detective Conan, that little kid with the glasses. That's it.
If you thought Ash never grew up, move aside.
But isn't the thing, his gimmick, like, he turns into the kid?
Really? Why would you turn? Why would you transform into a child to become a more effective detective?
Jimmy Kudo is a high school detective who sometimes works with the police to solve cases. During the investigation, he's attacked by members of a crime syndicate.
He's a high schooler, but he's like 3 feet.
They force him to ingest an experimental poison, but instead of killing him, the poison transforms him into a child. Adopting the pseudonym of Conan Edogawa and keeping his true identity a secret, Kudo lives with his childhood friend. He lives with her? That's crazy. Dang. And her father, Richard, who is a private detective. Throughout the series, he tags along on Richard. Wait, so he stays as a kid, or?
I think it's time we finish up this podcast.
Anyway, yeah. You're right. So, I kind of had mixed feelings when I right after I watched it. Because I did think, I had really no choice but to compare it to Mononoke and Spirited Away. And when I walked away from their first viewing, I thinking this was a solid but not as good as those three, but I still kind of feel that way, I think, if I compare it to those two movies. But it's still, the more I think about it, the more I love this movie. Like, it still does a great job of really hitting all those Ghibli notes. And, you know, as much as you could call them tropes or cliches, but regardless, I think, to me, the cliche of Ghibli is they do great animated storytelling. And I think that's a good thing to repeat again and again. And yeah, it does encapsulate so many tones and emotions. It's able to go across different, you know, characters are relatable. And I'd say the story is fairly straightforward. They don't really cut away to maybe to the military sometimes, just to see what they're doing. So the story itself is fairly simple, I guess. But the way they're able to do it, I think, is great. For 1986, it was revolutionary. And just really fun to look at. Like, I know we didn't really touch that much into the animation or art style, other than just calling, you know, timeless. I still think it does. plenty of details. You know, the Ghibli food scene, like, I think that's a thing because they're so detailed. But it's not just the food, especially with all the steampunky things, all the moving gears look great. So, no, definitely big recommended to me, coming from me. It's a good movie. You should watch it.
So, I think I'm going to have to agree with you. I don't think I would say this is my favorite Ghibli movie, but I think it's definitely worth a watch because this is the movie, as far as I know, or as far as we know, that created the blueprint for all those Ghibli tropes and the Ghibli formula, you know, like a physical change of physical appearance, the food scene, bombastic music, flying scenes, going on a grand adventure of sorts, all of those elements. And maybe it might seem formulaic to some people, but that doesn't mean necessarily that's a bad thing. If anything, I would say, despite being formulaic, it proves to be entertaining. Now, I think having this discussion with you, though, has further increased my enjoyment with the movie, especially with the whole vertical directing thing, because I didn't realize that until now that you mentioned it. It just shows the skill that went into creating this movie and why I believe Ghibli is still such a big, or this is the movie that made it, it put Ghibli as a big studio, I'd assume. Or it established Ghibli, I would say.
Yeah, it definitely established. That's a good word for it, yeah.
But if there's no more closing notes, I think it's time we end it here. Hey, we're not a weekly podcast, but we pretend to be. Catch you next time, folks.
See ya.